Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of our consciousness and what that really means to be free thinking, open, evolving people on a planet that's open and evolving. And that's why I'm talking today to Winston Shrout. He'll be doing a very interesting conference coming up with James Gilliland at the East SETI Ranch. And Winston, welcome to the program.
Well, it's good to be here. Always happy to talk about these things. So,
are the things that, when you say these things, it's about economy and consciousness, basically, right?
Well, right now, most people seem to be trapped in this third dimensional dilemma, as it were. Many people are trying to raise their vibrations to go to new heights and so forth. But what their problem in many cases is that they're bound down by some of these third dimensional problems, in particular debt.
For instance,
very, very, very difficult to try to meditate and do those kind of things when the sheriff is knocking on your front door ready to throw you out of your house. So
that's exactly where a lot of people are. They think they're high and enlightened, but you know, they're suffering, you know. And so what's your solution to this?
Well, since 2004, I've been lecturing as Solutions in Commerce. You know, a long time ago, I was told I could either be a part of the problem or part of the solution. So I decided to be a part of the solution. So over the years, in essence, what we've done is develop technologies and so forth to help people deal with a variety of problems, basically that involve debt, third-party debt collectors, you know, traffic problems, civil court, IRS tax problems, and on it goes.
So, yeah, talk. I need to talk to you about this. Okay.
Okay.
No. So how do you, what do you do with about all that stuff? Yeah, tell me.
Well, the basis, a lot of people are not aware. And the main problem that people have is not understanding money.
I don't know anything about it. All I know is it buys me things. But I have no idea where it comes from, how it's made, let me give you an instance. I had a student loan, and it's like the government gave me money, right? But did they just fabricate the money out of nowhere? And if they did that, how could they charge interest on things that are fabricated out of nowhere? That doesn't make any sense to me. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's the very same problem that's being dealt with all over the planet. I'll give you a for instance at a very international level, but it's the same wherever you're at. And that was back in, I think, 2011. I co-authored a white paper, basically, with a colleague of mine, Keith Scott, on this very subject. The goal at that time was Keith sent that white paper to the financial ministers of Europe. In essence, what it laid out for them is exactly the dilemma you're faced with, which is where did the money come from? Mm-hmm. And so
where did it come from? But also, what's the ramifications of it? Anyway, yeah, I think you're on it. So go ahead.
Let me explain this whole story, and I think that'll become apparent. In this instance, a financial minister in particular, the financial minister of Ireland, he got the paper, he studied it very closely, and he became convinced that there was a problem. And so, in essence, what he did, he went to the banks that had claimed that they loaned money to Ireland, and basically he told them, if you can prove that you loaned us any money, we'll gladly repay it. But if you can't prove that you loaned us money, then we won't repay what you didn't give us. And he stood by it. And so that helped out Ireland a great deal in that particular instance. And so it's the same thing with what we're talking about here.
But you're saying they couldn't prove that they loaned him money?
Because they didn't.
Well, I still got some money for my – I got money. I got money. I mean, it became money. The check for the student loan was actually money, though, wasn't
now,
it?
Where did that money come from?
Well, I don't know where it came from.
I'll tell you where it came from.
Yeah.
When you went and filled out an application for that loan and put your signature on that, whatever institution that you made that application with took that application to the U.S. Treasury and got that money under your name from your account that was created with the birth certificate.
Really? I mean, I've heard this before, but no one ever convinced me that's real. So everyone who's born in the U.S. with a U.S. birth certificate has an account, you're saying?
Correct.
But what's so, how much is in that account?
Well, that's of no consequence. What is of consequence is that when they loaned you money, as you suppose, they loaned you your money and charged you interest for the use of your money.
But wait, how is it my money when no one ever told me this? I had money there.
Okay. Well, we need to discuss a little bit more about money so that you'll understand. There's many forms of money. Most people, when they hear the word money, they think of cash. But that's not the only kind of money that there is. Basically, if you want to break it down, you could break it down into private versus public money, or we would say money of exchange versus money of account. Now, the thing you're talking about that was created by the birth certificate is what is known as money of account, which was created for your use in the discharge of debt, public debt. So you, in order to understand the concept, you simply have to understand that there's different kinds of money, and these are not the only two, certainly. But you have to divorce your mind away from the relating the word money to cash. They are not the same thing.
Okay.
Now, what you're calling cash is actually what we would refer to as money of exchange, because that is something that you have interjected your energy into, which gives the cash the real value. Now, this money of account is simply a device which was created to accommodate double entry bookkeeping, which is a system of accounting that we use in the public at this point.
Wait, I'm losing you. I mean, I appreciate the time and you, of course, your study. I want to follow every detail you're saying. I think I lost you with the how, if everyone's born within this country with a birth certificate, how is that related to some sort of money? That part I don't get.
Okay. Have you ever went and got a certified birth certificate to look at it?
I do. You want me to look at it now?
No, I'm just, do you have one?
I have a certified, U.S.
What kind of paper is it written on?
It's written on like a old photocopy paper, I think.
Okay, well, that one there that you're talking about is your certificate of live birth. I'm talking about the birth certificate where your name would be written in all capital letters.
Oh, yeah, capital letters. That's right, yeah. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
Okay, here's the deal. If you go and get a certified copy of your birth certificate, it'll be given to you on bond paper.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, that's a very valuable instrument. It's a bond. Now, let me explain. When a baby is born, the mother, as witness, fills out an application for a live birth. Now that application moves through the commercial system, ending up in a company in New York City called the Depository Trust Company. The Depository Trust Company creates bonds, basically in the amount of $35 billion. But remember, that's not money. Those are bonds. Those bonds are there to guarantee the discharge of debt by the citizens. And
Wait,
so
that part, wait, I don't quite understand what that means, the discharge of debts. Can you,
okay.
no, because I
Well,
don't know anything about money. I don't,
all right.
anyway, yeah, please tell
Well,
me.
we could take the whole hour and barely scratch the surface on that.
Right.
But the important thing is to understand the difference, between the private and public money, the difference, between cash and non-cash transactions and so forth. What you actually got into with that application for the student loan was what we would call a non-cash transaction. It did not
Right.
involve cash.
Right.
And so the transfer from the treasury to the company or bank or whoever that quote unquote loaned you the money was a non-cash transfer. It was simply an electronic transfer. And then they allowed you to extend bank credit based upon that transfer. Now, this is technical. Okay, so
Okay, I think I'm with you so far today, yeah.
yeah, so did the bank loan you any money, or the whoever you financed that loan with, did they loan you any money? The answer is no. They
They
didn't loan
did
you any,
not.
no, they did not loan you any cash.
But
Now,
okay.
you made the mistake of paying them back with cash on a non-cash transaction, and that's what's causing the dilemma in your mind. Now, that's a mouthful, and for those who have never considered these things, I can see where it causes a great deal of confusion.
Yeah.
However,
Are
unless we
you
take the whole
saying that I did not owe them the money that they supposedly loaned me? Did I owe that or not?
you never owed anybody for that.
So all the student loans that people are complaining about, that these are not valid, are you saying that?
They're valid because there's a contract in place, but go back again and review. Is this a non-cash situation or a cash situation? And the answer is it's a non-cash situation. What they would like for you to do was give them cash for the non-cash requirement. And if you don't, then they start raising all kinds of trouble and all those kind of things. So, to completely understand the situations and not to give your audience any misconceptions,
Right.
a deep study of money and creation of money and all these things would be necessary. And we do not have time in one short hour to analyze that whole thing. But people can start to look at the concepts, and if they want to go to my website, for instance, which is WSSIC.com, which stands for Winston Shroud Solutions in Commerce, and on the product list, there is a single topic DVD called Money of Exchange versus Money of Account, wherein I make an explanation of this concept.
Wait,
Okay.
can I just ask you one question? I
Sure.
still owe some money on that. Do I have, if I chose not, is there a legal way to not pay that back and be free of debt?
Exactly.
Yes.
That's the whole issue.
How do you do, how can everyone, how can I do, how can everyone be free of debt?
Well, that's okay. Let me explain this. And this is the reason why I've done these two seminars now at East City Ranch, the second one coming up here this next weekend, the title of which is Removing Commercial Karma.
Yes,
Now,
good.
most people do not realize that debt is only a concept. For instance, I can go out and touch a tree, I can touch a car, I can, touch a house. But I dare anybody to go out and touch a debt. It doesn't exist. It's only a concept. The concept of debt and credit were created to facilitate our present system of accounting, which is double entry bookkeeping. But they're only concepts. There's nothing real about either one. All right, now apply that to the more esoteric spiritual realm about karma. Is there such a thing as karma?
Well, it's a form of debt, I would say. Yeah, it's a
only as you give it recognition.
Right, I totally agree with you. Totally, right. Yes.
Now, to help people out, I have here a little quote from a book. This is a series of books called The Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East.
I have those books. I love those books.
Go to volume 3.
Okay.
185. No, it's easy. 185. Oh, yeah. At the bottom of page 155, here's the quote. Now, this quote came from a holy man there in their journeys. And he said, karma does not exist. Karma is but retribution for bringing into manifestation discord and inharmony. Substitute renunciation for retribution, and you correct the cause for karma as it exists only in the thoughts of those determined to manifest karma.
Okay. Right.
So you start talking about karma and you talk about debt, and they're basically the same concept. Debt only exists, you know, when you recognize it. This is all quantum here.
Right. But I'm still not sure how I can be let go of this student loan for like just.
Okay. Well, get your mind off that for a little while. We have other things to speak of here.
Okay. No, I like where you're going with it. I think a spiritual perspective is important, but thank you. Yes.
Yeah. And so again, you know, since about 2012, you know, when we had the time shifts and all those kinds of things,
yes.
And many people were working to elevate their spirituality and so forth. I immediately recognized that many of them were being hampered by the third dimensional concept of debt. And so I infused myself into that community purposefully. Mm-hmm. And in that infusion, I ran upon James Gilliland. And so we have worked together. And so that's the reason why I'm presenting this seminar at the East City Ranch this next weekend.
Yeah, no, James is a great guy. I know him for a long time. He's doing great work. Yeah. So, okay. So I'm with you up to there. Okay.
Okay. All right. So,
I still want to understand then, do I owe any, you're saying I don't really owe anything because it's a concept, or not just me, but all the people out there. But how does that legally translate? If it is legal, is debt legal? Is what they're saying? Legal is a sense of reality that's a common agreement, but there's also certain rules in place in a sense. So how do you understand all that in relationship to debt and karma and money and everything else?
Okay, well, let's take a look at the word that you just used. You used the word legal.
Yes, legal.
All right. Do you know the difference between the word law and the word legal?
I don't know anything, okay?
Okay. Well, let me describe it to you. Law pertains to things that are real. Legal pertains totally to fictions.
But does that hold up in a court of law, which is real?
First, you have to create a court of law because all of our courts are legal. All the court system are fictions. That's why the big movement with some of these groups and so forth are trying to establish common law juries, grand juries, and things like that. That's what they're working toward, is try to reestablish law Whereas all the systems that we presently have are legal, which are fictions.
But people still go to jail for legal, or they still,
Only as they agree to.
What if they don't agree? They still have to, you know, isn't there some consequence even if they don't agree to the legal fictions?
Okay, go back again to this saying about karma does not exist. Whereas he finally concludes, it exists only in the thoughts of those determined to manifest the karma.
Right, right.
Okay, so any kind of fiction, any kind of concept only exists in your reality as you give it credibility. This is all quantum.
No, I understand, but there are legal, let's call them legal actions people can take, right? That affect, even if you don't believe in it.
Yeah, if you want to work in the fiction world, that's fine. Yeah, that's okay. If you want to do that, do you have to do that? And the answer is no.
All right, so you're saying then there is no legal or lawful reason to pay back a debt, this kind of debt.
Okay, let's get back to the word law for a moment.
Okay.
All right.
I also know you give 2, 3, 4 day workshops on something that kind of fit into 55 minutes here. And I appreciate you taking, time to define it all. Yes.
Yeah. People are confused about the word law and they terribly misuse it. Now, law is a result of a contract. Okay? So comes the contract. Now, if both parties to the contract are satisfied, the contract is executed and it goes away. Now, what if one party goes into breach of that contract? What is to be done? The law is written into the contract as a remedy for a breach of the contract. So before people start studying law, they should study contract, because law does not exist without a contract. Now, in order to facilitate certain operations, they have created a fictional world, which is known as the legal world. Now, that legal world right there does not exist until you give it credibility.
And right.
So people have to understand the difference between law and legal to make any sense out of this. And you have to be careful of your words when you start referring to these things. For instance, are there any valid laws in the United States of America? Yes, there are. They're properly enacted by the respective legislatures, whether it be a national or state legislature and so forth. There are certain words that have to be included in that. And for those that come from the national government, those laws are in what's known as the statutes at large. And they're published in the Federal Registry. Now, what are all these other codes and regulations that everybody seems to be plagued with?
Yeah.
Yeah. Those came from what's known as the United States Code. There's 50 of them, which is a very significant number. And in those codes, they were originally designed as a shortcut to the real law, which was contained in the statutes at large. However, the United States Code severely diverted itself away from the law and turned into complete fictions. And certainly since 1947, with the enactment of the administrative law procedures, all of these codes and regulations and so forth are simply a matter of an administration and have absolutely nothing to do with law. So, for those that would like to study law, go see what contract that law applies to. Because most of the things, I mean, if you go into what's called a law library, which is a joke, there'd be books and books and books and books all over the place with books. All right. Now, you would have to be able to separate which one of those books actually deal with law and which one of those books deals with codes and regulations and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Most people are plagued by the codes.
Well, if you don't follow codes, you could be arrested or fined legally, right?
Legally, yes. Okay.
And then you'd have to pay that or be put in jail, right?
Okay. The word pay does not exist in our present commercial system. And it's again, you know, I mean, I've been lecturing on this now for 12 years, and so I can't condense it all down. But
no, I know.
Let me just give this little hint right here. Is that since 1933, the whole world, all the civilized world, and as the undeveloped places come along, they got into it too. They went from the use of gold or a gold redeemable currency into negotiable instruments. In other words, our money system prior to 1933 was replaced with something else.
We have federal notes now, and there's no gold and backing to these dollars. Right?
Okay, well, kind of right, but
okay. It's
not exactly correct. What's called Federal Reserve notes, if you look at them, if you have any kind of instruction in negotiable instrument law, you will immediately see that what they're calling the Federal Reserve note is not a note at all. It's a perpetual annuity bond. Okay. But we use it typically like money. But actually, if people understood the use of Federal Reserve notes in our national commerce and so forth, only accounts for about 6 or 7% of the transactions. Prior to the use of credit cards and all those kind of things, the main form of currency was bank checks, which comprised about 70 or 75% of all transactions. Now, since the use of credit cards has come into use, then certainly that number has shrank and so forth. But actually, the use of what people call cash only comprises, at this point, probably even less than 6 or 7%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but when you start to talk about a true note, then you're talking about a discharge item which was provided for as the remedy when they changed the money in 1933.
Mm-hmm.
So most of our transactions are simply what we would call discharge.
Right.
Now, and so if you have a piece of paper, or if you have a stick of wood, or if you have a pocket full of beads, if you have inserted your energy into those items, they have real value, and you could exchange those energy-laden items for other energy-laden items, and that would be called exchange. So regardless of what the piece of paper is, whether it looks like a Federal Reserve note or it looks like this or it looks like that, is of no consequence. If it's a true exchange of energy between people, that's one thing. But when you get into the public, when you get into public transactions, so forth, if they can trick you into giving them energy, that's exactly what they will do. And so,
what do you mean trick them into giving you energy?
Making you believe that you have to give them cash for a non-cash transaction.
What would be a non-cash transaction?
Your student loan.
Okay, but what's another example within like everyday use?
Taxes.
Taxes.
Bank loans. credit card loan, credit card use of credit cards.
Well,
Those are all.
If I use a credit card, someone's paying. I mean, I'm not paying right away, but someone's paying whatever.
Stop. Now, let me ask you a question. When you got that credit card, how did you get it? Did somebody just come and hand it to you, or how did you get it?
Well, I went to the bank, and they issued it to me. Actually,
no,
I don't really.
Give it to you. What did you have to do to get that credit card?
I didn't have to do that much. Actually, I don't really use credit cards. I use a debit card, but nothing, I suppose. I mean, fill out
an application.
Right.
How did you get that bank account? You filled out an application. How did you get that student loan? You filled out an application. How did you get that driver's license? You filled out an application.
Right.
Application. And any time you see the word application, your thought should be taxable item. Because you're asking for a benefit privilege. And a benefit privilege is always a taxable event. And if they can trick you into giving them energy for a non-cash situation, then they got you. And this is what we've been trying to educate people to, is to understand the difference between, money of exchange, which has energy in it, and money of account, which is simply an accounting device.
Wait, so you're saying taxes are not lawful, full of law?
None that we have presently, no.
Okay, so people don't have to pay taxes? Is that what you're saying?
Okay, let me get that word pay.
Okay.
Because that's a misnomer there.
Okay.
All right. In order to pay, you have to have an exchange. Okay?
Okay, I get
that.
The
word pay and exchange are equivalent terms, but the word pay does not relate to discharge. And So when we're dealing in the public, or what people call public debt, we're talking about discharge. Now, between me and you, if I come to your house and say, boy, I sure like your car out there, what would you take for it? And you say, well, $5,000. I say, okay, here's $5,000 that I have put energy into. So you and I would do an exchange. You end up with the $5,000 and I end up with the car. Now, that's an exchange, reality for reality.
Right.
When you get into these other situations, especially where you filled out an application that they've already monetized, and they're charging you interest on your money, then why in the world would you give them something that you have inserted your energy into? Now, the technology to do this is what we've been working on for a very long time. But my point here, my point in getting into this discussion is for the sole purpose of impressing on people that are listening to this that you need to know what money is. How many different kinds are there? How is it created? Where does it come from? Because that is what is causing the dilemma with people, is because they don't understand what money is.
Okay, I don't think I understand it then.
But, that's fine. I mean, it takes study. You just don't get it, but listen to me yammer here for 15 minutes.
No, money is not just what these different types of bills with people's faces on it is. Is that money?
It depends on how you got that. Did you get that piece of paper with that president's picture on there by your labor?
Yes, I did, actually.
If so, then you have inserted energy into that piece of paper.
Right.
It's your energy.
Okay, I'm with you. Okay, why does the government feel they have a right to have some of your energy?
Well, you go way back. It's what we call the Babylonian money system. I mean, it's been on the planet ever since the days of Babylon, probably introduced by some ETs from Orion. Prior to that time, the people did not use that system because these entities that came in, whether it was Anunnakis or whoever it was, they introduced the concept of interest and usury.
Yeah, usury. I was going to mention that term. And actually, in the Bible, it says it's not a very nice thing to do, is usury, is it?
Exactly. And so
explain it, though. Explain usury.
Well, let's go back to a newborn baby. Look at all the energy that was put into producing that baby. It took about 9 months. Mm-hmm. A whole lot of energy was put into the value of that baby. Now, was the mother charged interest on the energy that she created to create that baby?
No. Well, I'm not sure what you mean by interest. I mean...
Usury.
Oh, okay. Usury, I mean, is interest, but...
Okay, so the mother labored and put energy into that new baby, and then God or whoever came along and put a living force into it, whether you call it a soul or a spirit, and did God charge that entity interest for what he put into that body?
No, I would say no.
Okay, no. So that's the basis then of all life on the planet. And so someone came along and said, hey, how about we charge that baby interest? And so they do. And so because people don't understand and so forth, then they fall victim. They fall victim to these concepts, but it was not that way.
Well, isn't there an easier way of saying, if I give you $5 because you need that of my labor, then I want you to give me $7 back because that's $5 less than I would have had. Isn't that a way of saying interest like that?
From my description, that is ungodly.
Okay, I buy that.
It's not natural law. Now, any commercial system, in order to be successful, has to comply with natural law. If natural law is avoided, abrogated, or changed, then that commercial system will at some time fail, as our present commercial system in this country and across the planet has failed. And that is why we're working very diligently to correct the worldwide financial matrix.
Right. I want to know how you're doing that, but I would say this concept of usury or interest is what's doing in the world a belief in that anyway. You know, it's like the government gives you, what, $5,000, you end up owing $25,000 from a usury type of... manipulation that doesn't seem to be real at all.
Well, going a bit esoteric here, if you refer to the book of Revelations in the Holy Bible, it talks about the fall of Babylon, and as a result of that, it says, and the merchants will howl because they can no longer charge interest.
Well, you know, there was the Jubilee year. Every 50 years, where all debts were resolved. There was actually in Iceland, the government just absolved all debt. Would you suggest that something like that could happen here and should happen?
Yes, correct. That will happen with the new administration that will come in November. Once we get past that election and the new president is sworn in and so forth, then they will put into effect a law which is referred to as Nasara, which is in fact a debt jubilee.
Now we don't. Wait, how do you know that's going to happen with a new administration?
Because of what I know.
What do you know? Tell us.
Oh, gracious. Well, I've been intimately involved with some of these changes that are fast upon us. And we don't have time to go into all the things that have been done to prepare for this, but simply to say that the correction of the financial matrix on the planet has been and is under the authority of the ascended master known as Saint Germain.
Love Saint Germain. Yes. No, I do like him.
He's been working on this for several centuries, and now we have come to the culmination of his and others' efforts in this respect. And so when you say, how do I know about these things? It's because, again, the association I have and some things I've personally been involved in and things I have witnessed.
So we don't have to worry about that because we're only a few months away from a new administration, right? No, I'm serious. I'm serious.
If you worry about debt, you're worrying about nothing in the first place.
But I mean, we don't have to even, I mean, your seminars are great and it's all waking us up, but it's all going to be absolved in what, 6 months or something like that.
Okay, let me help you with that.
Yes.
How long do you think it will take to put Nisara into effect? We don't know, but with the energy that's coming into the planet, with the shifts in consciousness, we suspect that it will not take altogether that long. Most people don't realize just because you elect somebody to be a president or a governor or whatever. I mean, that doesn't say a whole lot because the government is run by the administration, not the president. So, even though we have a new president, he wants to enforce Nisara and so forth, how long will it take to get the administration into such a position that they will comply? And so, to say, that we're going to turn on a light switch and everything's going to change is incorrect. It will still take a great deal of work to get these things adjusted. One of the key elements that will happen is in effect, the removal of the Federal Reserve notes, which are interest-bearing instruments.
But they don't have enough gold to back up the money supply, though, do they?
Okay, let me keep going
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
here. Most people don't realize, but Federal Reserve notes are international currency. The United States is the only country on the planet that does not have its own national currency. And look what a problem that has caused. So, here shortly, in connection with the correction by Saint Germain of the financial matrix, the Federal Reserve notes will be removed, and we will be using United States notes, much like the ones that President John F. Kennedy tried to introduce in 1963. Okay, and those are non-interest-bearing notes.
Okay,
Okay.
I agree with that. I think interest is just a ridiculous money-making scheme. But anyway, go ahead, continue, please, because
Yes.
your
Now,
life.
all of these student loans, all these bank loans, all these mortgages, and all these things are denominated in what kind of currency? Federal Reserve notes are what we call the U.S. dollar.
Okay.
The U.S. dollar no longer exists, or the Federal Reserve notes are no longer in use. What will become of the contracts for debt that were denominated in those instruments?
They'll become null and void.
There you go.
Okay.
Bingo.
Okay. Well, we have a lot to look for. And then what will the, and that will actually free the consciousness, which gets into your work of the solution.
Exactly.
Well, I'm excited about this. I'm glad you got some inside information there. But is it, I mean, so you would, and this will happen if Hillary Clinton is elected, you're saying.
She won't be elected.
She won't be.
There will not be any criminals on the ticket.
Well, who's going to be elected in the coming election?
You want my prediction?
Yeah, sure.
Donald Trump.
And what will he do? He wants to hold on to his money, doesn't he? I mean, he's a criminal himself, though.
Well, I don't know that to be a fact, but you asked me for what my guess was, and my guess is Donald Trump.
Yeah, but doesn't he want to hold, doesn't he have most to lose if or maybe more to gain if for himself?
Okay, for the real, people should not be concerned about this. If you have money in the bank, if you have Federal Reserve notes stuffed in your mattress or buried in a can out in the backyard, those Federal Reserve notes will be redeemed dollar for dollar with the new United States notes. So even though Donald Trump is a billionaire, however you got it, it's none of my business, and I really don't care. But his billions in FRNs will be converted to billions in United States notes. Same for everybody.
Okay, and having United States notes instead of a Federal Reserve note, what will that do? Will that absolve the debt, you're saying?
Well, if okay, first off, again, going back to the concept of contract, a contract does not exist where it's made, it exists where it is paid. Okay, as I mentioned a while ago, since 1933, it's impossible to pay a debt, you can only discharge a debt using discharge. Instruments. And so, in consequence of that, since 1933, contracting has been on a limited basis between private parties. Now, all these applications and all these things that people are going to get, to the bank for student loans or whatever, are not contracts. Mortgages are not contracts. They would best be described as purchase agreements. Okay? So there is no, by and large, there is no true contracting going on in the United States. But after we get the new United States notes, then people should, at that point, get into a position where they will be able to successfully contract, and they will not be involved in purchase agreements any longer.
Okay, so how will that change everything we do in our society?
Well, it's an interim step. Now, the purpose of perhaps many of the interviews and so forth you've done, whereas people are working upon the collective consciousness and all those kinds of things, is for the purpose to move out of the third dimensional vibrations and move into a fifth dimensional vibration. And they've been hampered by third dimensional problems.
You're right.
But when the third dimensional problems are diminished, go away either at your hand or at the hand of the new system and so forth, then people will be able to move much quicker into a fifth dimensional status. And when you get into the fifth dimensional status, you no longer need money. A fifth dimensional entity can create whatever it is that they need. These ETs that come here, I haven't heard of any that are below a fifth dimensional level, and they laugh at us. They say, money, banks, checking accounts, you guys are crazy. Because, once you get into that fifth dimensional status, then whatever it is that you need, you can create for your own use. You no longer need to do this kind of commerce that we're presently trapped in. So now we see the necessity of moving into that fifth dimensional realm so that we can put all these things behind us.
Well, I love that thinking, way of thinking. So, what is that going to take to really move into these fifth dimensional realities?
Well, listening to some of the commentators such as Tolek, Alex Collier, and some of those, they have indicated that this planet that we stand on right now will actually move into a fifth dimensional reality. Tolek had mentioned that this is the first time in the history of the universe this has actually happened. Now, usually what happens when people ascend, they go to a different place. But in our case here, it appears, if they're right, that when we ascend into a fifth dimensional vibration on an individual basis, that we will still inhabit this planet as it moves into a fifth dimensional planet. So the necessity is upon us then to kind of to speed things up so that we are capable of operating at a fifth dimensional level. Hence, Removing Commercial Karma, the name of my seminar.
No, I think it's great. So is there a time frame you feel to this fifth dimensional shifting?
Yes, the word is soon.
But not that soon can, on a cosmic level, soon can be 1,000 years, or it could be.
Okay. Like James Gilliland says, his masters and so forth that he speaks of at this point are saying very soon. Does that
Okay, I would say, well, that's exciting. So, in this fifth dimensional reality, then the process of exchange will be what then? Or
You
will
don't
just.
need to exchange, you can create.
Okay, well, what about food? What about.
Create.
I love that. I'm with you. But I think people will have to also do some work on themselves to get to that fifth
Well,
dimension.
each individual does need to work on themselves to prepare for that opportunity. And we have many people on the planet right now who are already operating at a fifth dimensional frequency.
Okay, like who?
Well, you.
Well, thank you. It's true. I
See,
try.
you're being held back, though, by the karma that you're recognizing in the third dimension. And
I
so,
don't want to recognize. I want to be free of that.
well, no.
Okay, but actually, we
Remember
have to.
the word that this master used in this book I just read from, used the word renunciation.
Yeah.
Renunciation of the karma. Or
Yes.
moving into a higher plane of existence, and then the karma no longer exists anyway. But what does it take to get from here to there? And the purpose of Solutions in Commerce is to give people keys, technologies, and so forth to keep the debt collectors from beating down your door and seizing your bank accounts. That's what we do.
Right. Winston, we could go on for hours. We do have to wrap it up, but your this workshop coming up is how long will it be?
It'll start on a Friday afternoon at 1, and then we'll go all the way through Saturday and Sunday. For those that would like to, it's kind of late now, but for those that would like to sign up for that and come, if they'll go to Private Invitation ECETI, which is ECETI.com, and the information for signing up for that seminar at James's Ranch will be found there. Or just go to his website and trace it down. But Private Invitation ECETI.com will take you right straight to any kind of registration you might want to do.
Right. And your website again to get really deep into this, because I know we were all over the place and you were laying out some very basic concepts which I think are important. So how do we get to that?
My website is WSSIC.com, standing for Winston Shrout Solutions in Commerce.
Thank you. I have to say goodbye. Maybe I'll talk to you after the show. I want to get a little more information, but this is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. Thank you for tuning in tonight. Winston Shrout is available on his website. Please look him up. Very interesting. This could be the transformation some of us, all of us, the planet has been looking for. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.